The Dread Core. Season 1, Episode 0, Pilot. The extraction was not going well. Actually, if Sykes was to have had a rare and uncharacteristically honest moment just then, it appeared to be spiraling down at an alarming rate toward critical failure. Not that he hadn't piloted the Xiphos from Thisbe's dark side through cragged caverns to their target location with less than an arm's width off either wingtip, or that Krill hadn't timed circuit charges to kill the outdated alarm sensor before the slipbreaker tripped, or that Jed hadn't been able to handle the jelly-jowled fat-ass wielding a taser rod outside the south entrance to get Emmy inside. That was all playbook-level stuff, and they had executed it so many times that it hardly felt like work. The problem, the real problem that Sykes hadn't accounted for, was the fact that their extraction target didn't want to be extracted. A voice came through a haze of static.
I'm pin. Need extract. You copy?
Emmy's voice sizzled out in a wash of static.
Say again,
Sykes barked.
Location.
Better?
Loud and clear.
Found another way around. I'm almost at the surface vents.
I am. Not we are, Sykes thought. That did not bode well. He rubbed his scarred thumb against the grey stubble at the tip of his pointed chin, then leaned in toward the radio mic.
Target status.
Dead.
How dead?
Like her brains are smeared on the bottom of my boots like dog shit, dead. Now get me the fuck out of here.
Copy. Command broadcast. Abort mission. Meet at the rendezvous.
Sykes had been on failed missions before. Plenty of them. But that familiar swell of nausea bubbled up in his gut all the same. No less than the first time when he tried to lift Zapkar when he was just 9 years old. 40 years on, he thought that acidic sensation might go away. If anything, it got worse. Though, that may have also been heartburn. Sykes flicked his mic off, the echo of his broadcast playing on repeat over the radio channel as he fired up the Xiphos's engines. At least he had his ship. No matter how dire the circumstances, he relished the old, familiar hum of those custom-tuned thrusters. Krill ducked in between a generator unit and a humidifier vent just outside the facility, careful to keep the volume down as she listened in on Sykes' conversation with Emmy. In Krill's line of work, it helped to be skinny as a thruster cable and shorter than a standard H-fuel canister. The first time Krill met Emmy, it was like one of the models that she hated from the luminescent holoscreen ads had stepped out of the picture and into real life. Did she idolize her? A bit. Sure. What kind of 17-year-old girl wouldn't? But Krill also knew that figures like Emmy's were prone to getting stuck in narrow service vents, especially on non-compliant custom builds like the Xiphos. So, the extraction target was dead. That meant there was nothing left to do now but abort the mission and haul ass off this decrepit chunk of ore. Krill peered out from behind the generator, the Xiphos touching down 100 paces from her location. Krill kept her eyes open, but her mind was still on the extraction target. What a crazy bitch, she muttered. Wanted to stay with the convent. Now that's a first. No doubt, it was concerning. Convent extractions were good money, and relatively low risk, as whatever security existed was, as a rule, outdated, unserviced, or hardly enforced at all. What's the risk of runaways on a planetoid with a thin, artificial atmosphere? And who cares about a bunch of misfit, middle-class girls? Not the planetary government or the Solar Union, that's for sure. And not the oh-so-pious Threskian Order. Though they at least pretended to. And that was important, because poor girls could be shipped off to work in factories or sold to traffickers on the black market. but the Threskian Order needed to keep up the appearance of trying to redeem women from families with enough wealth to pay their tithe. On rare occasions, the assignment to convent, or consecration as they called it, was voluntary. But usually it had to do with an inability on their part to keep either their mouths or their legs shut. Sometimes both. Hell, some parents even shipped their own daughters off by signing the consecration papers themselves. The only hope for these miserable wretches to escape was to claw their way up the ranks of the Threskian Order, or pray to Eos that Daddy had enough money squirreled away to pay an extraction bounty to a crew like Krill's. Then they could go back to shopping, or studying, or flirting, or doing too many squats in front of a mirror. Whatever the fuck else Krill imagined regular 17-year-old girls do. If Krill had to guess, it was just bad luck. And the crew had had more than their fair share of that lately. According to the netreel, this girl had been posing in a bodycon dress with friends at high-class joints in Upper Arboria and posing pictures of her ass by the pool less than a month ago. Not exactly a picture of religious fervor. Maybe her sudden and unexplained conversion was the result of a new neural procedure the Threskian Order had developed. Something to expedite the brainwashing process. Krill knew it usually took at least 6 months in a convent for their minds to really go offline. Or maybe it was a new hallucinogenic pharmaceutical, some kind of trial medication.
Speaking of medication,
Krill mumbled. She reached into the zip pouch on her belt and nimbly fingered an orange pill. She popped it in, the familiar citrus bubbling fizz burning at the back of her throat. A moment later, it kicked in. She felt her whole body light up, roaring like the hum of an old V-72 Star Rover. She surveyed her route to the Xiphos one last time, then started counting down from three. Emmy kicked the corner of the humidifier vent with the heel of her boot and a screw popped out the other side with a ping. She tried bracing her shoulder against the panel to force it open, but it still would not flex enough for her to slip through. The thump of heavy boots down the corridor ceased and then abruptly started again, this time getting louder rather than quieter.
Fuck!
Emmy spat. She whipped out her arc blade, which lit with a bright flare of orange before she thrust it into the metal grating. It hissed and squealed as fumes reeking like lead and sulfur stung her nostrils.
Come on,
she grunted.
Come on!
Down the vent corridor, the boots stopped again. The heavy click of a helmet lamp echoed through the chamber.
Bloody hell! Hush! Stop! Look at this!
The young man's voice cracked a bit at the last word. Emmy thought he might even still be a teenager. There were so many convents now, it seemed they were getting desperate for guards. Not like before when, well, a lot of things had been different. Emmy shook her head and blinked away the stinging fumes.
Focus,
she hissed.
Focus! Forget it, Walker!
An older man bellowed, the bass tone of his voice echoing up the vent chamber.
We'll come back for what's left of her later.
But Hirsch, should we...
Keep following the sound of the cutter!
That particular moment was a rare occasion on which Emmy would have been glad to see Jed. She had fucked him once years ago, during a drunken one-night stand in Arboria. That was years before they had crewed up together under Sykes' command. Back then, even now, he was built like a marble statue, all bulging muscles and strap-taut skin. But God, he was dumb. And he was an ass. For years, Jed harbored some kind of boyish crush on her, an obsessive hangover from their hookup. She hadn't just moved on. She didn't even remember him the first time she stepped aboard. Working together since had been tolerable. Well, barely. The fact was, she wasn't in this line of work to become someone else's sex toy. Not again. Though in moments like this one, when she expected a bullet in the back of her head at any moment, she did find herself wondering if she should have considered that marriage proposal from a banking executive on Luna Prime more seriously. Emmy's arc blade flickered and died.
Fuck,
she hissed, jamming it back into its sheath. Behind the ringing in her ears, she could hear footsteps approaching. She was out of juice and out of time. Emmy stepped back, took a deep breath, then threw herself full force at the half-cut metal grate. Jed saw the Xiphos touching down at the rendezvous point, the flare of engine thrusters scorching Thisbe's pale grey surface. But he had also heard the panic in Emmy's voice. Not that she ever panicked, but he knew her well enough. At least, he thought he did. Even Jed himself would have admitted that the last decade or so of his life had been a disappointing haze of mixed drinks, recreational drugs, and muscle-building supplements. The reek of sweat at the gym blurred with the salty tang that pervaded Arboria's sleepless, below-ground dark club scene. It had all started as a dream come true. He had survived his tour with the Holy Threskian army on Ganymede, and was young enough to enjoy whatever pleasures could help him forget all that he'd witnessed during the Jupiter crisis. It was all locked up, somewhere deep in his mind, and every distraction helped bury it in layer upon layer of mental sediment. Jed couldn't quite pin down when the threshold had been crossed, when the drinking and dancing and fucking switched from entertainment to tranquilization. Every time he felt himself coming up out of the throbbing hum of pounding electronic bass, he pushed himself down again. Work out harder. Drink more. Dance more. Hookups. Gambling. Whatever. Hell. He'd even experimented with this new street drug the kids were calling fizz. That shit put him close to the edge. Too close. Really, he should be dead. But he got his second chance, and when he woke up, really woke up, it all happened so fast. Connecting with Zayat, crewing up with Sykes for a big score, and seeing Emmy again after so many years. The universe was speaking, and he was finally ready to listen. Jed had a purpose now. He knew who he was. He was the hero, the muscle. The guy who comes crashing through the door and clears up shit most everyone else would run from. And all that he had been made to do with the Holy Threskian army back on Ganymede during the Jupiter crisis wasn't his fault, and it certainly wasn't him. Now he had a chance to show the galaxy who he really was.
Jed, do you copy?
Jed nodded, his jaw set firm.
Loud and clear.
Where the hell are you? Krill's back, and she said she saw Emmy run in before she did.
The radio crackled as Emmy's voice came through.
No, you idiots! I'm not there! Fuck, I'm still...
Jed heard it in her voice. Emmy was hurt. Badly.
I got out, but I cut my leg on the panel, and there are two...
Jed cut her off, already breaking into a sprint away from the Xiphos and back toward the ventilation shaft.
Hold on, Emmy. I'm coming for you.
Sykes smacked the console as he saw Jed turn 180 degrees away from the Xiphos and back toward the convent.
Damn it, Jed, don't!
But it was too late. Jed was skipping over the dull planetoid's surface with long, athletic strides and soon disappeared behind a crag of rock. Sykes spun his chair back to face Krill. Her restless legs bounced and she looked up at him with moondisc eyes which seemed too big for her tiny frame. Even with the short-cropped teal-blue hair, the reflection of Sykes's sister in his niece's face still gave him a cold shiver.
You've been popping fizz on the job.
Krill shrugged. Job's over.
For fuck's sake!
Job's over!
Did you see Emmy board or not?
Krill blinked. She didn't usually hallucinate on fizz, but then again, she was pretty amped up when she took the hit.
I think so. Maybe not.
Professionals do not.
Sykes was interrupted by the distress signal blaring through the radio. He threw up his arms and spun back toward his console.
This discussion is not over.
Sykes leaned in and punched the radio with his left hand, cranking the pre-flight thruster with his right.
Jed, this is Sykes. Return to the Xiphos immediately. That's an order. Emmy, what's your status? I'll bring the ship round and we'll pick you up.
The air hung still as Sykes and Krill listened to the empty buzz of a silent radio. Emmy heard the footsteps rattling up the vent turn to dull clicks as her pursuers reached the surface.
Stop right there, you sadistic bitch!
The older man bellowed.
By Eos! You'll burn for what you did to that innocent girl!
Emmy thought of hurling her arc blade at him, but there were two of them with guns, and the odds were at least one of them knew how to shoot. She tossed the weapon aside and flipped onto her back.
You can thank your auto rifle for that mess.
I saw her hands were bound like an animal to the slaughter. You apostate whore,
Hirsch growled.
You probably pushed her to make it look like an accident.
Behind the two guards, Emmy caught a glimpse of Jed climbing up the side of the vent, as lean and as silent as a predatory cat. She pretended to wipe something out of her eye, hoping like hell they hadn't caught the brief shift in her gaze.
Better late than never,
she thought. Now, all she had to do was keep their eyes on her.
It's always the word whore with you religious types,
Emmy cooed.
What's your obsession with whores?
She sat up and slowly started to unzip her brain-splattered dropsuit. The guard's eyes fixed on the zipper like flies in a drip of glue. Emmy flashed a grin at Hirsch.
There must be so many repressed fantasies stuck in your itty bitty brain. You wishing I'll make them come true?
Hirsch raised his gun.
Stop! Stop it now, you unholy filth! One more word, and I'll carry out Eos justice myself.
As if on cue, Jed came hurtling down from the top of the vent, flattening Hirsch's neck with a bone-crushing stomp as the rest of the guard's frame crumpled. Walker fired off a panicked shot which almost hit his own foot. By the time he had his bearings, Jed had rolled back, catching Hirsch around the neck with his leg to haul him up as a shield. Walker's next shot hit Hirsch square in the chest, and before he could pull the trigger again, Jed had snatched up the other gun and fired. The shot caught Walker in the jaw, the young guard's hands helplessly clutching the gush of blood from his neck. Walker toppled over, squirmed a little, then went still. Jed laid back, Hirsch's corpse slumping over his torso.
Damn. Meant to graze his arm.
Oh, hell, Jed,
Emmy snapped.
Why'd you go and grease him? He was just a kid.
Jed made a show of heaving the corpse off his chest and springing to his feet.
Like I said, I didn't mean to. And don't thank me or anything, unless you were enjoying the company of these two upstanding gentlemen, in which case, accept my sincere apologies.
Emmy tried to stand, but the pain from the gash in her leg hit the base of her neck like firecrackers, and she fell back down. Jed waited a moment, a boyish grin on his face.
All right, fine,
Emmy said, rolling her eyes.
Scoop me.
Jed picked Emmy up, his bare, blood-splattered arms and her half-zipped suit giving them the look of film stars posing for some trashy action flick poster. By that time, alarm sirens from the other sectors of the complex were ringing, wailing like banshees across the bare rock surface.
Fuck! Ow! Watch the leg!
Jed was already hurrying back toward the Zephos.
So, what happened?
Target didn't want to leave. She was crazed with something. I don't know. Never seen anything like it. Didn't plan on her being uncooperative, but cuffed her with my belt and gagged her with... Ah, fuck, this burns.
Heard about the brains. Did you grease her?
Emmy gripped her leg and continued through clenched teeth.
No. I got her as far as the corridor to the exit vent, but she kicked and ran down another passage I hadn't scouted. As soon as she turned the corner, an auto rifle got her. First shot to the shoulder, second shot to the head. When she spun back from the recoil, her brain splattered and I slipped on them. Nearly slid right into range.
She took a deep breath and winced, adjusting her grip on her leg and squeezing harder.
Then I heard goons and had to improvise an exit.
Jed smirked.
Quite an improvisation.
Not my best work.
Say, when we get back...
Jed's sentence was cut short by the crack of a long-range gun. Before Emmy could blink, she was hurtling through the air. She came to a tumbling crash, the gash in her leg tearing open wider as it smashed against the stony ground. When Emmy looked up, she was staring back at the convent complex. Jed was writhing on the ground, clutching his leg. Behind him, movement caught her eye. A whole host was pouring out from one of the access doors just 50 paces back. Not guards, but girls. All of them were dressed up in their convent garb, saggy grey habits hiked up with one hand so they could run. In the other hand, each held what looked like a small hammer, and they were closing in. Fast. Ziphos's thrusters roared as Sykes pulled her up and over the rocky outcrop. Krill gripped the cross straps of her jump seat, which snapped tight against her chest as the spacecraft tilted forward. She loved ships, sure, but flying in one, actually flying, was a whole other matter. Once they cleared the bluff, she could see the whole convent complex half sunk into the planetoid's rocky surface. A haze of artificial atmosphere hung over the square ventilation towers and the narrow rooftop windows, though interior fogging obscured any view of the inside. More evidence of how run down the whole place was. With a stomach-wrenching drop, Sykes drove the Ziphos down toward the nearest humidifier vent. Krill pressed her feet against the floor to push herself up. She could just see the outline of a crowd gathered around a mangled ventilator grate.
What the...
Sykes started, trailing off as they drew closer. There, about 25 feet below the Ziphos, they saw a crowd of convent girls looking up at them, their eyes swollen with rage as they each wielded a bloody hammer. All at once, they charged toward the ship, despite its elevation, leaving two bloody corpses in their wake. Krill recognized the bodies by their clothing. It was Emmy and Jed. Or more accurately, what was left of them. They looked like macabre toy dolls, except with all the stitches torn and their stuffing pulled out. The buzz of fizz in her brain morphed into an ear-piercing squeal as a knot of nausea rose in her stomach.
Oh, God,
she gasped.
There. No. I'm gonna be sick.
Shit,
Sykes shouted.
Not on them!
But it was too late. Krill hurled, the luminescent orange vomit slipping down towards Sykes' feet. He pulled up just in time to level the Ziphos and stop it from spreading underneath the cockpit seat. Sykes hovered a second, his glassy gaze lost to some distant point on the horizon. He had seen things, but this was different. This was... The metallic ping of a hammer against Ziphos's underside startled Sykes to his senses. He glanced back at Krill, whose face was about as green as her vomit was orange, and clenched his jaw. With a deep breath, he adjusted the thrusters and punched it. Thisbe's slate-grey surface blurred below them shortly before it disappeared into the great, abysmal nothingness of empty space. As Sykes and Krill were thrown back against their seats, a cry came from the corridor that led to the crew quarters. He glanced back at her to see that her eyes were as wide as his, then boosted the thrusters once more to get them far enough out to engage autopilot. Two long breaths, and one more for luck. Then he typed in the coordinates to Arborea and flicked the hands-off navigation switch. Sykes unclipped his cross straps and scrambled out of the cockpit. Krill unbuckled and stumbled forward, one hand landing squarely in the smear of orange vomit.
Oh,
she groaned.
Gross.
Come on,
said Sykes.
Grab an arc knife and follow me.
Sykes drew out his own arc knife with a well-practiced flick of his wrist and hurried toward the passageway that led to the crew quarters where the sound had come from.
Said you saw Emmy board.
I thought I did. She was maybe 50 paces ahead of me.
Maybe you did see someone,
Sykes whispered as he took another careful step forward.
But if you did, it wasn't Emmy.
Sykes punched the door lock on Jed's cabin, knife held up and ready in case anyone sprang out. It opened with a hiss to reveal nothing but an empty room. Not a single item was disturbed there. Everything was tied down or locked up, just as it should have been. Next, Sykes shuffled toward Emmy's room. This time, when the door slid open, a limp arm fell out into the corridor. Emmy's room was a disaster. Clothes and gear were strewn about, with cabinet doors swinging open on their hinges and grey trays half open in disarray. Among the mess was a discarded grey habit, the telltale garb of Threskian convent devotees. But most surprising of all was the half-dressed woman laying in the doorway with a swelling bruise on her forehead. To be continued. The Dreadcore is narrated by Alex C. Stewart, written by Aaron Voss, and produced by Chris Howitt. The Dreadcore is not brought to you by some stupid mattress company or yet another fucking meal kit service, but by independent creators trying to make something awesome. To support this show, share this episode with friends and check out our Zyphos Crew merch shop linked in the show notes. The adventure continues next time on The Dreadcore.